She's like the dew on the mountain, sweet as the rain. And if she ever goes away, I hope she'll come right back again, come right back again. She's like the dew on the mountain, sweet as the rain. And if she ever goes away, I hope she'll come right back again, come right back again. Hi folks, this is Jim Hurst. You're listening to 91.3 FM, WVUD and WVUD HD1, Newark.
I grew up in Texas on those great...
The views expressed on this program are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of WVUD or the University of Delaware. Welcome to the Music Room on WVUD and WVUD HD1 Newark. Each week, WVUD hosts different artists to talk about the music they play and the lives they lead. Stay tuned for the Music Room on WVUD.
Stay tuned indeed. And we let Jim Hurst introduce today's show with his song, Dew on the Mountain, and then an ID he did for us, because indeed, he will be our guest on the Music Room today. I'm Mando Richard, and I'm really looking forward to talking to Jim again. He's always fun to have on the air. Great guitarist, great collaborator with lots of different musicians. He's going to be in the area on March 24th in 10 days, so we thought we'd let him come on the air. But while I'm getting him on the phone, we're going to listen to another one of his tracks. This is from the brand new record that he just put out from the Jim Hurst Trio, and it's just called JHT1. And we're going to start off with the track, Why Do You Treat Him Like You Do?, which is written by a songwriter named Roger Klein, who's one of our listeners and lives in the area. So let's give a listen to the Jim Hurst Trio and Why Do You Treat Him Like You Do? And while you're listening, I'll get Jim on the phone. This is the Music Room on WVUD.
You were lost in the desert, you were sinking in the sea. No chance of survival for you. He sacrificed himself just to give you a way out. Why do you treat him like you do? When the bright sunshine breaks a cold dark sky, a new morning dawns for you. You never take time to thank him for the day. Why do you treat him that way? Did you forget how far he came for you when you were all alone? You were tired, you were beaten, you were poor. You were thankful when he pulled you from that pit that you were in.
Jim Hurst, welcome again to WVUD.
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Richard. Appreciate it.
Well, we're just thrilled we could have you on the air again. I think this is the second time we've talked on the air. We've talked off the air several times, and you're just a class act all the way around.
Well, hey, can you call all the promoters that are not necessarily wanting to hire me and tell them that? I'm kidding. I've been really fortunate to get to work some pretty good festivals, and some of them are well established, and some of them are very new, including the guy that wrote that song, Roger Klein, at the Circa Blue Festival last May. Got to see him. He handed me that CD, and he said, "Hey, you might like this." And I said, "Okay, well." And then I asked him, "I said, are you looking for somebody to record this, or you just want me to hear it?" He said, "Well, whatever, you know." So I told him, and I think I put it in the liner notes, that I must have listened to his CD 15 times or 20 times before I could, you know, have the, you know, the wherewithal to be able to call him up and saying, "Hey, man, is anybody recording this?" And I told him I would like to do it, and he was very kind. I told him I wanted to do a little bit different version than his. And sometimes songwriters are a little, you know, it's like they're children, you know, these songs, and I'm the same way sometimes. You know, it depends on how far they want to take their own version, but, you know, I was always, I try to be respectful, and of course, Roger was very, very kind, and, you know, he said, yeah, man, you know, he actually told me that sometimes he does the song a little slower than what the demo was. But Roger's a really nice guy, and I met him, like I said, at that first year Circle Blue Festival up in West Virginia. It was awesome.
Around here, he's known as the guy that is in charge of the parking volunteers at the Delaware Valley Bluegrass Festival.
Yeah, I think I met him there a long time ago.
Yeah.
And I think he had to actually remind me, because I don't know if I remembered it, but he was very kind about that, too.
Yeah, well, that's a great version of that song. And why don't you brag on the guys that are in the trio with you, because it starts off with a really, really cool bass work.
Yeah, that's Eric Alvar, E-R-I-K-A-L-V-A-R. He's not only a great player, he's also a tremendous guy. He just turned 25, and he plays bass, he plays guitar, he plays fiddle, he plays mandolin. You know, he does all these different things, and now he's in a master's program at the University of Florida for bass performance, I think it is. You know, they always have those, you know, specified, you know, tracks that they do. But, you know, he had to, his audition was the Bach cello suite on upright bass. And if that don't tell you something, I mean, for those bass players out there that use a bow, that can probably tell you a lot. But for those of you that don't play bass, it far be it from me to even think about it, much less try to attempt that. But, you know, he's just a wonderful musician and a really good guy. And he augments the music so well. You know, he never overplays. He plays what needs to be done. And, you know, he's very melodic. He's very rhythmical. And we seem to lock in together timing-wise. And so that's fun. The other guy on mandolin and fiddle is Nate Lee. L-E-E. He's originally from Texas. He's a graduate of South Plains College down in Leveland, Texas. He's also a student, you know, like Eric and I. He's a student of all the music that he's heard and other musicians he's been around. And he's such a really, really, really good guy and a wonderful musician as well. And those guys just grabbed the material, the songs on the that I submitted for the, you know, that I came up with for the recording. And they just ran with them. I mean, they were very reverent and respectful to the melody and the grooves, but they just have such musicality. And actually, Nate wrote one of the songs on the JHT1 CD called The Machine. And that's a really cool kind of a, I don't know, Latin-flavored thing. And it's done with fingerstyle mandolin in a lot of it. And it's really cool. So, you know, those two guys are fun to play with, no doubt.
Well, it's one of the things that has marked your entire musical career, whether you're leading a group like this new record, the Jim Hurst Trio, JHT1, that came out this fall, actually came out last right. summer, or whether you're, you know, working with Steve Spurgeon or Clara Lynch. I mean, everybody loves collaborating with you.
Well, thank you. You know, they invite me to the projects. You know, I worked with Claire for most of 15 years. I mean, it was over a 15-year period, and there was times when we weren't working together in her bands. She actually was our booking agent when Missy and I, when she took a hiatus from the Front Porch String Band, Claire Lynch and the Front Porch String Band, to stay home and finish, you know, kind of bringing her children to adulthood, or at least young adulthood. and so she took on booking Missy and I for a while, and then, you know, Missy and I and myself and, you know, on my own, did some duet and did some, demo work for her songwriting. And then her and I did some duet stuff there kind of a little bit. And then she started out the Claire Lynch band, not the Front Porch String Band, didn't come back out, but her husband didn't want to tour anymore. So they retired the Front Porch String Band name and idea. So she came out on her own, and I think she's doing really, really fine. I got to do that for 5 years. So I finally left her in 2010. But, you know, being around the people that I've gotten a chance to get around, Richard, you know, the John Cowans and Tim O'Briens and Mark Schatz and Claire Lynch, Missy Raines, all these different people who are artists in their own right, and they collaborate at times, you know, Steve Spurgeon, you know. Now I'm doing things on my own, which, you know, that's me as an artist as opposed to a side person or a co-owner like it was when Missy and I had her duet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's all music and it's all fun. And one of the things I really relish, I love to do, is to be part of a complete sound as much as we can make it. So working with the Claire Lynch Band, I was working with, you know, three other people, including, you know, Claire and two other people and myself, to create what we thought Claire wanted us to create. And every night getting to stand on stage with those people and also with Claire and hear her sing every night, or whoever it is, you know, that side man mentality is something to really have fun with. But it's a completely different kind of joy than getting out and doing my thing, whether it's a solo or doing a duet with Roberto Della Vecchia or doing the trio with Eric and Nate or whoever, and then, of course, my solo thing. It's a different kind of, all those are different kind of creative juice release, and it's just a lot of fun. I just really feel honored and privileged to get to do what I love to do.
Well, I've seen you a couple of times just by yourself, you and your guitar. I mean, as I think I told you, out comes this guy, looks like a butcher or a conductor on a freight train with a guitar, and that's all, and he gets the whole audience just eating out of the palm of his hand, and it's I think what you're doing there is you're collaborating with the audience too, you're inviting them in, and it's like this, even if it's a big audience, it's this intimate little conversation between you, your guitar, and us.
Well, and you know, that's a blessing, because I mean, there are a lot of people who go up to perform, and that's what the people want. They want their, as my dad used to say, they want their wigs blown back. They want to go up and hear this powerhouse, whatever, whether it be a full band or, you know, an orchestra, whether it be rock and roll or big band bluegrass or big band country or, you know, whatever, you know. And I think that's part of it. That kind of power is part of it. But the nuance as well is something that's been in bluegrass for many, many years. I mean, Mac Wiseman stepping on stage with people that's never played with him before, everybody's listening to Mac. Or, you know, Randall Hilton stepping up on stage as a solo act, you know, playing his couple of guitars that he named after women, or gave women names, female names. And then, you know, you had John Hartford and different people, Doc Watson, you know, several people have done either solo or duo or trio or something, and now Tim O'Brien and Daryl Scott. You know, I try to do my thing with this. And, you know, I think the one thing I had to get past is, you know, in the recordings sometimes, on my recordings, is full bands. And like on Second Son, my Pinecastle release back in 2000, I had 22 different guest artists that played music with me. And it was a lot of fun. So, you know, that was a blast. But I think what's nice about a duo or a trio or a solo, for sure, it's I don't know if it's a right term, but it's almost like a palate cleanser. You know, you got bluegrass band and bluegrass band and bluegrass trio and whatever, and sometimes it's old-time music, sometimes it's more along the country, maybe old-time music, maybe old-time folk music, I mean. And then, you know, you get, of course, the hard-driving bluegrass and the more smooth kind of countryside of bluegrass. And when they bring someone like me or Tim O'Brien or whoever on the stage, it's a little bit of a different venue, a kind of a palate cleanser. You know, it gives you a chance to, you know, to listen to smaller nuance. And I think that's something that I really try to do. And so it takes the audience. I think it requires the audience to be willing to accept that. And first of all, it needs, you know, the promoter, the organizer of whatever it is, a concert series or a festival or a coffee house or whatever. It takes the courage and the foresight of that person or them people to be able to put that on their stage. And I've had other, you know, folks say, well, I don't think we can ever do a solo. But if you ever get a band together, let me know. So I understand that. But I also know that, you know, at Delaware Valley and the Brandywine Friends and, you know, Joe Val and, you know, Dripping Springs, there's so many different festivals that I've been to that, you know, after my set is over with, I had many people come up saying, man, just you by yourself is so different, and it's welcome because it's not two or three more, you know, bluegrass bands, although they love that. I'm not saying it's better than, it's just a different,
it's just different
flavor.
Yeah,
and so one of my favorite comments comes from one of the members of the Brandywine Friends, And I asked him if he would quote it for me, and I just haven't ever got around to it. But he said, and I don't want to name his name because I haven't asked him if that would be okay. I'm sure it would be, but everybody knows him. He said, sitting out at the Delaware Valley Festival a couple years ago, he said, man, I was sitting there, and it was almost like listening to Doc Watson, and it was almost like sitting and living, you know, in the living room with you. And it gave me that warmth and that feeling of Doc Watson, even though I wasn't doing – I did do one of Doc's songs, Deep River Blues, but the stuff I do is a variety of things. And that's a big, big compliment to me. You know, he just made my day, my week, my year, really, with that compliment because – if I can get somebody to even compare, you know, to say my name next to Doc Watson, I'm in good shape. And it was that Delaware Valley Festival is a special festival anyway. I always feel like Carl and you guys, everybody does such a great job there. And and the fans are tremendous. The people who show up there year after year, they come up to me at the end of the set and they tell me what they, you know, how much they liked it. And they, you know, they leave their chairs, their seats, or their campers or whatever, come up there and tell me that. And I don't take that lightly. That's huge for me.
Well, we're looking forward to having you in the area on March 24th when the Brandywine Friends will be hosting you at the Unitarian Universalist Universalist Hall on Willow Road right here in Newark, Delaware at 8 o'clock on Friday the 24th. And it'll be just Jim and his guitar.
Yeah, and my crazy jokes. And we'll see what kind of hairdo I have. Yeah, I played that UU church before with Claire. It's a really fine venue. It's fun, and it's intimate enough that, you know, you don't feel like you're in a big hall, but it's also big enough that you don't feel cramped. And I think it's a special place because of people who not only put it on, the Brandywine Friends and others, but it's also the folks who attend, and it really always feels good there. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, let's let the folks hear something else. I mean, you mentioned your dad in that this portion of the conversation, and I think we picked out something your mom and dad wrote from Intrepid.
Well, Intrepid was my first solo project. What I mean by that, truly solo. It's just me and my guitar on everything except for the last song. And that I had some guest singers come in, but it's me and my guitar only for all the rest of it. And my kids actually talked me into recording the only song that my mother and father co-wrote. Mom's never written another song, and Dad, I think, has written other songs, but we can't find the book, and I don't even know if it was his. He may have just written down some songs that he liked. But anyway, they wrote this song in 1963. I call it a two-chord wonder song. And it's a little bit sad. It's kind of got that Mother Mabel Carter, the Carter family feel, because that's the kind of music that my dad and mom listened to. And that's the kind of guitar playing my dad did when I was growing up. But it's got a little ray of hope, a little bit of sunshine at the end. And I hope you guys like Through the Garden.
Once you were my sweetheart, darling, in our blissful childhood days. But then we had to part, dear. You have gone so far away. We wandered out through the garden, and all the flowers were in there. You whispered how you love me.
We're having such a good time talking about traveling around the country, packing our instruments into different kinds of cars. We almost missed the end of that song, Jim.
I know it.
Through the Garden.
What musicians do, you know, we at some point physics enters into the thing, you know.
That's right. Well, you know, I mean, if you put the bass in the car, how many other musicians can I still fit in? Yes, that's
right.
That's an issue.
It could be a carnival act, you know.
The other thing that I think is really interesting to me is your approach to the guitar. It's a little bit different than most bluegrass flat pickers.
Right. Well, I grew up in a household where my dad loved all kinds of music. My older brother loved all kinds of music, and the whole family did, really. But my dad and older brother were the first ones I saw play music. Well, my dad's brother as well. So it was Eldon Hurst was my dad and his brother. And they never went anywhere to play. They just played around home. You know, they never tried to go. Actually, they did try to go to Renfro Valley Barn Dance over in Berea, Kentucky, or Mount Vernon area over there. But and they were on their way, and the car broke down and never went back. So it probably kept them from the heartache of trying to be a musician on the road. But, you know, he played a lot of flat picking, kind of like Mother Mabel Carter did with a thumb pick and a finger. I call it drag finger. The flat pickers call that the Carter scratch. It's got a certain sound to it. It's a, you hit a bass line and you stroke down and up, and then you go, you know, a bass line down, a bass line up, and stroke and up. So it's a doogie-jigga, doogie-jigga, doogie-jigga. But she did that with a thumb pick and with finger. Dad did it with flat pick. Well, he also brought in a bunch of different other music for us to listen to. You know, we heard Jim Reeves and Marty Robbins and, you know, George Jones and the Osborne Brothers and you name it. You know, Flatten Scruggs, Jimmy Martin, Reno and Smiley. He loved all that stuff. Porter Wagoner. I mean, he loved a lot of different kinds of music. But then he started bringing in guitar players like Merle Travis and Doc Watson and, you know, Chet Atkins. And then my older brother brought in Jerry Reed. And a friend of my dad's saw me trying to play some of that stuff with a flat pick, holding the flat pick with my thumb and first finger, and then using my fingers to do the things that Chet and Jerry and Merle and Doc and all them people were doing. Well, for me, you know, I was just trying to do what I thought was what they were doing. And so he brought, a friend of my dad's brought a thumb pick, and he said, here, try this. That's what they all use, Mother Mabel Carter and Doc Watson and Don Reno and all these different, Earl Scruggs, all these people. So I started messing with that. Well, I liked that, but when I played bluegrass, I felt like the flat pick was what's supposed to happen, and I still do. Because I don't want it to sound like, you know, Merle Travis or Jerry Reed is playing bluegrass. I want it to sound like someone who plays flat picking is playing bluegrass. So when I play bluegrass, either in a band or a guest up on somebody's stage or my own thing, a lot of times I have, most of the time, I have my flat pick in my hand because I think that's what's makes it sound the best. Although Jimmy Martin and Carter Stanley and George Shuffler and Lester Flatt, a bunch of those guys played a thumb pick early on. They didn't play flat pick. But I think the reason why is because they didn't want to have to worry about it flinging off into the audience, you know. So they that was a way for them to hang on to the flat pick. But so when I play, it's out of reverence for whatever song, whatever genre, whatever band I'm playing in. So like with Claire Lynch, it was probably, I don't know, 50-50 finger style to flat pick, maybe 60-40 heavy on the finger style, because some of the stuff she did allowed, you know, this more of a progressive, or I don't know what you call it. I hate to use the word progressive because that seems like it's way out there. But it's bluegrass plus, a little bit more than just standard bluegrass guitar. And then when I played, you know, with, you know, different people in a standard bluegrass fair, with David Grisman Bluegrass Experience, it's flat pick only. When I did my own Jim Hurst Bluegrass Band, which went over, you know, didn't go over very well, but you know, I'd say 75-80% was flat pick and only thumb pick every once in a while. But when I do my solo thing or when I do the thing with the trio, it's a mixture. The solo thing, I tend to lean a whole lot more on thumb pick because I'm trying to support chords with bass lines.
Right.
Doing things like, you know, Merle Travis or, you know, that ding, 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 ding on the thumb. So it gives me some support without trying to beat the guitar, you know, with a bunch of strokes. You know, if you play the guitar up and down with a flat pick, it almost sounds folky. And some songs it sounds perfect like that. Other songs, that's too much information. So I just try to serve the song. I try to serve the genre. You know, be respectful of all of that, and the songwriter, the creator, whoever that is, whether it be me or someone else like Roger Klein or someone. And, you know, it's all about that. I think it's a harmonious thing, and I think it's all about the listener, too. If the listener can see me up on stage, they don't expect five other people. They expect to hear me. So if I get up on stage and it sounds like more than one guitar, that's a pleasing thing. If it sounds like one guitar, they're fine with that, too. So I pick and choose what I do, but, yeah, sometimes while I'm playing finger style too, Richard, I'll grab the bottom of the thumb pick and then go up and down with that, and it serves as a flat pick. It's not quite the same for me, but I can get single string things, you know, 16th notes or whatever, up and down by holding on to it. Some people can do that with their thumb you know, Wes Montgomery was great at going up and down with his thumb. I mean, most of the stuff he played, he had all four fingers on the top of his big old guitar and used his thumb to do all that stuff. I saw a video the other night. So it's all out of reverence and all, you know, creatively what fits the song for me, really.
Well, again, Jim Hurst will be appearing in Newark at the Unitarian Universalist Hall on Willow Road on Friday, the 24th of March, 2017 at 8 p.m. You probably should get there by 7:30 to get yourself a ticket. And, Jim, we've, of course, run out of time, and the next DJ is standing out in the hall tapping his foot. So we're not going to get two more tracks in. I got something queued up from JHT1 and something queued up from Atlantic Crossing. Take your pick.
It's whichever way you want it. The Atlantic Crossing, I don't think too many's heard that, so you can throw that in there if you'd like.
All right, well, you were talking about reverence for some of the old music. Here's a Hank Williams song that you and your collaborator from Italy put together. Tell us just real quickly a little bit about that.
Sure. The album's called Atlantic Crossing. It was my idea to put Roberto Della Vecchia and myself on a recording to where he's a good flat picker from Italy and I'm an okay flat picker from U.S., and we brought material from both countries, some of it ancient. He brought two songs from Italy, World War One. I brought some old country and bluegrass stuff. And then we wrote some instrumentals to fill it out. And I actually had to learn to phonically sing some Italian on the song, on the CD, but only on two songs. But, you know, Hank Williams, man, is one of my favorites of all time. We did our little version of that, and it was a lot of fun. So I hope everybody enjoys this. And I'll see you guys, when you come out to the Brandywine Friends of Music, and I'll see you over there.
Thank you so much, Jim.
Thank you, Richard.
Blossoms unfold, the pastures were green and the meadows were gold. Our love was in flower as summer grew on,